Anyone who makes the decision to move from Colorado to Illinois should receive an official state-mandated warning. It should be brief and blunt. It should go something like this. Dear confused mover, we are astonished at your decision to leave Colorado for Illinois and offer three warnings. First, you've never experienced a real winter. Bring a bigger jacket. Second, forget about majestic mountain views and get used to the flat landscapes. Bring money for pizza and movies. And third, you will regret leaving colorful Colorado. Reconsider your plans immediately. Scratching our heads, concern Coloradans for Colorado. And so when I was 18 years old, I packed up my bags and moved from Denver, Colorado to Chicago, Illinois. And I remember as I walked through the streets, that bitter cold wind that sliced through the biggest jacket that I had. And I remember trying to make new friends out of these strangers. And I remember this new culture that I was not used to yet, and that fog began to roll in my life. And I remember as a young college student trying to wrestle with all these classes and with all these new assignments and syllabuses and thinking, how does this have any purpose, any meaning for what I want to do with my life? I remember this sense that my soul felt this lifelessness, this sense of barrenness within, of what am I doing here? How is this meaningful and purposeful in any way? And so I wonder this morning, do you remember a time in your life where your soul felt lifeless? Do you remember when you felt flat without that needed pop and fizz? Do you remember, have you gone through a season in your life that lacked vitality and vigor? Do you remember a season where that fog came in? 2 weeks ago, I saw this picture in the Times magazine. And as you see it, this young girl from Syria, she's had to make a makeshift hut because her city is being demolished. She knows firsthand the barrenness of her soul and the lifelessness of her city's soul. As she sleeps and as she wakes, she has this visual reminder of the crumbling city that once was where she played and laughed as a child. She has a reminder of all the pain and violence and warfare that's going on in Syria. Jesus was headed to Jerusalem with his disciples. His disciples, his closest followers. Sure, this all began with a sunny day. The disciples were called by a lakeshore. They were given these amazing teachings that taught them to look at the world in totally different ways. They saw healings firsthand. They got to be at campfires with Jesus for over 3 years' time. But then Jesus told them, I'm headed to Jerusalem, and the fog is about to roll in now. You are going to go through a season of your life that's going to feel lifeless, that's going to feel barren, without vitality and vigor. But hold on. And so Jesus must have known that these disciples were going to need something. They were going to need something more than their self-reliance to get them through this fog that they experienced. If they were going to not only just listen to these teachings, but live these teachings, but transform the world, to send forth and make disciples everywhere, they were going to need a different power source. And so Jesus, knowing all this, did what Jesus does. He told them a story. The story of the barren fig tree. The story, paraphrased, goes something like this. There's an owner who goes into the vineyard and He's ready to cash in on that crop that he planted 3 years ago. And as he kneels down to find those figs off of that tree, he sees that there's no figs. And so he says, cut it down. Why should this fig tree waste the soil any longer? And the gardener replies, let it be. Let it be. And I will dig around that fig tree, and I will fertilize that fig tree, and I will water that fig tree, and I will care for that fig tree for the next year. And if in a year you still haven't received anything from your investment, then okay, we can cut it down. And then he stops. And it's that Jesus thing of telling you a story and you're like, what does that possibly mean for me? We're headed to a cross. We're going to Jerusalem. There's all this fog around. What does it mean? And why does Jesus share it right now on this journey through the fog to the cross? Well, early Christians, they believed in allegorical interpretation, which meant that whenever you told a story, there was spiritual significance underneath it. The person and the place and the thing that were in the story, they weren't just literally a story. They were meant to be read for more, for metaphor. They were meant to teach you something deeper than is there on the surface. So we have a vineyard. A vineyard in this story represents the people of God, the church, those people to your right and to your left that offer you encouragement and compassion and attaboys on your journey to God. And in this story, the owner represents those past and present harsh voices. The owner says, cut it down. The owner represents all those voices in your life that tell you, you are not good enough. You are not beautiful enough. You do not have what it takes. You can't possibly do this task. The owner is representative of those people in our life that offers that superficial analysis of who we are. Cut it down. And then there's the fig tree. The fig tree is you and me going through a season of barrenness, of lifelessness, of fog. Those moments where, when we're by ourselves, if we're sort of gut-wrenchingly honest, we doubt, we despair. We don't know where the light of sunshine is going to come through. And in Lent, we experience these hard times, these difficult times as we journey to the cross. But there's another character in this story, the gardener, the one who speaks up to those harsh voices of past and present and says, let it be. Because I'm going to water, and I'm going to fertilize, and I'm going to do whatever I can to make this fig tree grow. The gardener is God. We have a God who wills our growth, who wills our flourishing, who does whatever it takes so that we can be bountiful, rich, deep, so that we can see through the fog to the bright sunshine of Easter morning. Your God is a gardener who waters your soul with spirit, who sustains, transforms, power beyond limit. Your God is a gardener who prunes in the proper season, who picks weeds that were not meant to be there, who leads you through Gethsemane, who prepares you for peace and hope and love. Your God is a gardener who sees beyond dirt and weeds and seeds, who replaces failures with flourishing, fearless deeds. Your God is a gardener who sees beyond dirt and weeds and seeds, who builds beds and fences and trellises, who protects from peril and pain and purposelessness. Your God is a gardener who rises early and never tires late, who wills the world's good, who works for robust and radiant fates. When your soul feels barren, when you are flat, without pop and fizz, lacking vitality and vigor, lifeless, without fruit, remember, your God is a gardener who waters your soul with spirit, who sustains, transforms power beyond limit. Once sterile, your soul rises. Once sorrowful, your hope rises. New growth, the cross-shaped horizon. Your God is a gardener. And so as you journey through the vineyard with the people of God alongside of you, you must learn to wait for the gardener, to wait for the new growth within you, the new growth around you, new growth in Syria, and even new growth in Illinois.